Sorry.
What? For what? Making me wait 20 minutes?
Texted you.
Saying you'd be 10 minutes late.
Or 15, 10 or 15 minutes late.
And you're 21. Is
I'm
everything
still late.
okay?
Well, I started choking.
I
Was
had
trying
to wait for that.
to be. Well, see, I'm still doing it. I was eating something really quick and I sucked it down the wrong pipe. And I had to, that delayed me from getting to the computer, apparently by 6 minutes. But I didn't want to get on here because I knew you'd complain and rah, rah, rah. So I have to go get my beer and I have to get my notes.
Oh my God.
So I'll be right back.
Welcome back to another episode of You Need to Watch While Drunk. This week we're continuing our month-long look at movies that we think should have been nominated for more or won more Academy Awards. And this week we have a movie that was not nominated for anything. And I think it should have been. And once we get to the end, we can find out if you agree or not, Sarah. But we are going to be looking at the 2018 movie Bad Times at the El Royale, written and directed by Drew Goddard. This movie stars Jeff Bridges, Cynthia Erivo, Jon Hamm, Dakota Johnson, Chris Hemsworth, Lewis Pullman. There's an actress named Kaylee Spaney, who I don't know her from anything before. And then there's also a brief appearance by Nick Offerman.
Did you know I recognized him the minute he walked in the hotel room?
I should
They
have,
never
but
showed his face, and then they
okay.
never showed like the flashback. He's got a mask on, so they never show his face or the whole thing. His voice is just so distinctive.
Okay, yeah, I did not recognize him. And then, oh, I was watching the credits at the end and I saw that. And then when I looked up which character he played, yeah, I did not remember seeing his face at all. And the very beginning of it is kind of in shadows almost. So I didn't know if I went back and looked at it closer, if I could have recognized him or not, but I didn't have a chance to go see.
And you might have looked this up, I don't know, but did you recognize Lewis Pullman? Did he look familiar?
I mean, he looked familiar back whenever I first saw this movie, I guess in 2018, and I didn't know where I
He
had seen him
has
before.
a relative in a movie that we've seen before. And he looks very much like him.
Well, with the name Pullman, is he related to Bill Pullman?
Yes, he is his son.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It sounds like him too. It's kind of freaky. They could be twins.
Well, I do know that Dakota Johnson
Well,
has some
everybody.
famous parents as well.
Yeah. Who are they, Jeff?
It Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith?
Yes.
So, do you have a synopsis for this movie?
I have a very vague synopsis. There's just way too much in this movie to try to be detailed with it. So this movie is about a group of strangers who stay the night at the El Royale Hotel and the events of that evening.
Okay. It's a little bit of a suspense thriller almost, would you say?
Very suspenseful. Sort of, to me, it reminds me of a Quentin Tarantino type movie where you're just on your edge waiting, on the edge waiting for something to happen. And something might not happen, but you're suspicious of it. And that is pretty much from the opening of the movie when they all start talking. I mean, that's pretty, like, the music that's playing is very ominous. The reactions of people, what's happening, what they're doing. I mean, it's really good character development and setup.
Yeah, and it has a twinge of comedy in there.
Yeah, there were some,
It's a little hard to pinpoint, really.
yeah. I would definitely think of it more as a thriller action type movie. It is not action in the sense of like Arnold Schwarzenegger, but like just things happening. But you know, it's pretty graphic. If you don't like that kind of thing, you probably shouldn't see this movie because it's got some blood. We'll just say that.
Yeah.
And pretty intense scenes. So.
And I really like how we are introduced to the blood at the very first of the movie. So, do you want to get into that?
Sure. I don't remember too much blood in the beginning, but okay. The movie opens with, I guess, a wide shot of a hotel room with a man checking in. The shot is from inside the room. And he comes in and it shows some quick shots, like quick edits of what he's doing. So he's walking into the room, pulls out a gun, closes the blinds, turns on the radio, and then starts digging up the floorboards. And he ends up hiding a bag in the floorboards and then putting all that back together, making a drink, sitting down for 2 seconds of calm. Then there's a knock at the door. He goes to the door, looks through the peephole, is willing to open the door, turns his back to the person standing at the door, and the person takes out a shotgun and blows him away.
And the blood we see, it splatters on the lens of the camera.
Oh, I didn't. I guess I looked down or blinked or something because
Okay.
it's a very quick opening. And so now it's 10 years later. Now, they don't tell you this, but I just know that the movie started in 1959. And so present day is 1969. There is a young woman that drives up and parks her car outside the El Royale. And she gets out and taking stuff out of her trunk, and she's got these huge, I mean, I know what they are, but the viewer doesn't know, but they're wrapped up in a blanket. It's like these two bundles of, how would you describe that? It's almost
Foam.
like, yeah, it is foam, but you don't see that. But it you know, the things you put on the bed, like the egg cart things that you put on a bed to make a softer, that's what it, the shape of it, but you don't really see it at
It
first.
almost looks like she's carrying her own sleeping bags. That's sort of what
But
it
really
looks
big.
like. Yeah.
Yeah.
And really light.
When she gets out of the car, she sees a priest standing in front of a block of rooms, and he's just sort of staring. And she says to him, "Are you lost, Father?" And he turns around and makes some comment about being in the great state of Nevada. And what we come to learn, he asks her how the weather in California is. And what we come to learn is that this hotel was built half on the Nevada state line and half on the California state line. And they are standing on opposite sides of the line, making a joke about it. So he offers to help her with her luggage. They go into the hotel, into the lobby of the hotel to check in. And this is, again, 1969. So it's this huge lobby, and the line continues into the lobby. You can see the red line in the lobby, and it's kind of all decorated the same, but there's little differences between Nevada and California side of the hotel.
One of the things I read in the fun facts was that they really use color to differentiate the two different states. So lots of yellows and oranges on the California
California.
side,
Yeah.
and then reds and blues on the Nevada side.
They did a really great job with that. It was a really, really great design. Anyway, they run into a man that's standing in there who introduces himself as Laramie Seymour Sullivan, who is played by John Hamm. And the priest shakes his hand and says that his name is Father Daniel Flynn. He is played by Jeff Bridges. And Laramie kind of ignores. I mean, he says he's polite to her. He says hello to the young lady, but then he doesn't offer to shake her hand or whatever. He just kind of walks away from her. And so he tries to hand her his business card because he's a vacuum salesman. And he had given the card to the priest and he tries to give it to her. And he's like, he asks her if she's in the hospitality industry. And she's like, no, I'm not. And he's like, well, you need to give it to your friends because I'm sure you have lots of them that are in need of this. And this young lady happens to be a black lady. So he's being passive aggressive and snarky with her.
A bigot.
Right. But he was doing it in a very subtle way. You know, it was very like he never, I don't know, he was just being very subtle. And
Like he's
this,
wanting to remind her of what her place should be.
right. And he has a southern accent. He's from Mississippi, or yes, I believe he said Mississippi. And so that kind of goes along with it too. But we don't know her name yet, but I'm just going to go ahead and tell you it's Darlene Sweet, and it's played by Cynthia Erivo. And Laramie starts telling Daniel and Darlene about the hotel, and he's saying that in its heyday, I mean, you couldn't get in. It was exclusive, and anybody who was anybody stayed here, celebrity stayed here. And about 3 years ago, they lost their gambling license, or maybe it was a year ago, I can't remember, but they lost their gambling license, and the hotel isn't what it once was. And as he's saying this, Father Flynn is looking out the window outside. Darlene is looking at the wall where it's got photos of like Marilyn Monroe and different people on the wall. And they're trying to get the clerk to come out to check them in. And they keep ringing the bell and it's not working. And so then Laramie insults Darlene again. And she's about had enough. So she goes over to the door and, you know, just knocks really loud on the door. And the bellboy, the clerk, comes out and he's very disheveled, like nervous. And this is Miles. He is played by Bill Pullman. Or no, not him, Lewis Pullman. So he comes out to check them in. And the whole time, Laramie is just getting more and more obnoxious. Like at first, he seemed very nice and cordial. And then as they're waiting, and he's just getting more and more, to me, he seemed to get worse.
Well, I mean, as if it wasn't bad enough to insinuate that Darlene was a maid, because what else would she be? When he sees her carrying those bundles and you can tell there is bedding, then he insinuates that she's a prostitute.
Right. Right. He was a nightmare. But he has been insisting that he ha get room one, which is the honeymoon suite, the whole time that they're talking. He allows them to check in first, but he says, just don't take room one. So Father Flynn goes up to the desk and Laramie says, well, wait a minute, son. You haven't given him the whole spiel about the hotel. So he makes poor little Miles come out and they do this whole thing about this is a bi-state hotel. To my right is the great state of California. To my left is the great state of Nevada. And then he goes on and on and he says that they can use the amenities anywhere. Father Flynn asks, you know, what's the difference in the hotel rooms? And he's like, well, they cost a dollar more on the California side. So anyway, Father Flynn asks to see a map of the hotel. And as he's looking at it, they are all distracted by the sound of a hot rod type car pulling into the parking lot. And it just kind of stops in the middle of the parking lot. She doesn't really park anywhere. She's just sitting there. And so Father Flynn takes a quarter and flips it or spends it and chooses his room based on the quarter. And he says that he wants to be on the Nevada side and he'll take room 4. And so Miles tells him to sign the ledger and then gives him the key and charges him $8, I think it was. Then he says, "Who's next?" And so Darlene walks up to the counter and she says that she would like a room in Nevada. And he says, "Okay, room 5." And she says, "Well, no. Do you have anything a little further out? Like, how about this room?" And he's like, "Oh, those rooms haven't been serviced and they're not fit to be in." And then this is where Laramie chimes in and says she doesn't want to be near the priest. She brought her own bedding with her. He's basically insinuating that she's a prostitute and that's why she doesn't want to be next to the priest. So then Darlene says, room five is fine. She's turning to leave and Father Flynn asks if he can help her. And she's kind of abrupt with him at first. She's like, "No." And then she stops herself and she turns around and she's like, "That's very nice of you, Father, but no thanks. I got it." So as she goes out the door, a young lady comes in, and this is Dakota Johnson. And she is playing a character named Emily. And, she's very young and she's interesting, I guess. To John Hamm, I don't know if he, I do, I don't even think he really says anything to her. Oh, he does tell her to go ahead and check in and a very, be my fucking guest. Like, he's tired of waiting, but he's like, "But do not ask for," well, no, he doesn't tell her that. She asks for room 1. And he's like, "You got to be fucking kidding me." And then the clerk tells her no or something. And so she's like, "Well, just give me something over here." And then he asks her to sign the ledger. She does. She's very rude. She walks away. She gets back in her car. And then Laramie walks up to the counter and he looks down. And he starts laughing and she had signed the register, "Fuck you."
I wonder when they stopped having you sign an actual register when you checked into a hotel.
When they started using computers.
I
I'm a
guess.
genius. I know.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, I don't remember even as a kid, even before computers, but I mean, it wasn't like I was checking into hotels, but I don't remember ever really seeing a register book that you saw.
Sorry, I'm imagining 5-year-old little Jeff with this little suitcase. "I'm here to
I want a room in California. I'll pay the extra dollar.
Okay, so Laramie walks up to the counter to check in and he looks at Miles and he smiles and he says, "I'll take room 1." And then a title card pops up and it says room 1. And Laramie is in his room after checking in and he's taking off his coat and looking at his watch and he's like, "Oh crap." So he picks up the phone, he calls his wife and son, and he's talking to them. And as he's talking to them, he is pulling the phone apart. And he finds a bug in the lamp and in the phone. And then he finds a second bug in the phone. Gets off the phone with his kid and immediately starts tearing the room apart. And he finds about 20 different bugs, but they're different. Like one looked like a black little square with a little wire coming out of it, or two little wires coming out of it. And the other kind that he finds looks like it's a circle, looks like almost like a little tiny donut with a single wire coming out of it. And I mean, he is ripping the room apart. He's tearing everything up, cutting the bugs out of the phone and the lamps. I mean, he's like cutting the wires and he's placing them on a table. So then he leaves his room and he goes to the lobby of the hotel. And the TV is on the desk and it's Richard Nixon. I don't know if I didn't get what he was saying. So something about Vietnam. He's talking about Vietnam.
It's actually a press conference that he held on January the 27th, 1969. So if it was live, then that's the date that this is supposed to take place. But it may have been a recording that the news was airing again. But it's at least January 27th or after in 1969. And he is already the president at this point.
So Laramie goes behind the desk and he's looking for a master key, and he finds what he needs. And there's a news report after the press conference that comes on about a couple of people murdered, and they're talking about the they're an elderly couple and they're talking about them. So Laramie walks back behind, like through the door where the front desk is, and he sees Miles on the floor because his door where he sleeps is cracked a little bit, and he's got a syringe sticking out of his arm. So obviously he's a heroin user, and he just leaves him there and he goes over to another door a little bit down the hallway. He tries to open it and it won't open. So he takes out a kit to pick a lock, and he gets in there in about 2 seconds, and he walks down some stairs, has a flashlight with him, turns on the flashlight, turns the corner, and there's a long hallway with a camera on a tripod at the very end of it. And there are at least, I don't know, four windows, five windows lined up. And so he starts walking down the hallway, and the first window he gets to, he looks through it and he realizes that it's the room that he's staying in, room one. And it has, he's seeing it as if, someone was spying on him. There is a mirror in every single room, like almost a huge like dresser mirror, and it's a two-way mirror. And so he's able to look in and see everything that happens in his room. And every single window has a speaker box on the outside where you can turn the audio on and listen to what people are doing or saying in each room. So he keeps walking down the hallway, and he comes to room four where Father Flynn is. And Father Flynn has sort of torn his room up as well and has taken up the floorboards in the room. And he walks a little bit further to room five, which is Darlene's room. He sees her hanging up the foam that he accused her of to be bedding, and it's soundproofing type foam. And then what's that thing called? TikTok. The time. Is it a
Metronome,
metronome? Metronome.
metrometer.
It keeps time. It
The
helps
little
people keep time.
tick, tick, ticky, ticky
Yeah.
tock.
So she starts that up and then she starts pacing. And so he reaches down, he turns the audio on, and she is singing. And she is singing the song, This Old Heart of Mine. And I love that song. And that was a really good version of that song. Because her voice is phenomenal. And he stands there for a while watching her and listening to her. He doesn't turn the box off. And then he goes down to the next room, and there's no one in there, but the lights are on. There's stuff in the room, and on the ledge of the, like under the mirror from the inside of the room, he can see the ledge. There is a gun and a knife placed on the ledge. And so he goes down to the camera and he checks the camera and then comes back and looks in the room again. And he sees Emily dragging a body into her room. And it is a young lady and she's knocked out, and she sits the young lady up in a chair and ties her to the chair and has her gagged as well. And then Emily goes over and sits on the bed and just stares at her. And so Laramie leaves the hallway and goes running outside to a payphone, calls a number, somebody picks up, and he says, I need to speak to the director, and it's Director Hoover's office. And he says, sir, we have a problem.
That's all we hear, though, at that point, right? We don't hear what all he says. Okay.
So then another title card pops up and it says Room 5. And it starts with a flashback scene in a recording studio. Darlene is singing as a background or backup singer. Background. Nope. What's it called? Backup singer?
Yeah, background vocalist.
Yeah. Okay. For what I'm assuming is the Crystals, because they are singing the song He's a Rebel. And the producer cuts it off, tells everybody to take a break, and then tells Darlene to stay. I was not 100% what he was saying to her, but I'm pretty sure that he was saying that he wanted to sleep with her, and if she played by the rules, she could have everything she wanted. And he berates her. It's horrible. And he tells her that if she doesn't go this route, she's just going to end up staying in shitty hotels after shitty hotels and singing in Reno. And so back to the present day, in her hotel room, Father Flynn knocks at her door. And he sort of flatters her because he's telling her that he heard her singing and she's like, "I'm sorry I bothered you." And he says, No. It was not a bother." And then he's like, "I was going to go get something to eat. Wanted to know if you wanted to go with me." And she says, "No, thank you." And then he says, "Are you sure it's my treat? Consider it payback for allowing me to hear you sing." And so she decides to go with him. So they go to the lobby. They decide to get some pie. Those sandwiches were so gross. And this is, I think, where the humor that you talked about kind of comes into it, because they had like a snack bar, but it was the kind with like the automated rotating things where you could put coins in and get a sandwich. It was like a vending machine, but it was the rotating kind.
And the food had been in there for a week, probably.
Yeah. And the sandwiches just looked so gross. And Darlene made a comment about she's not feeling brave enough to eat that sandwich. You have to see it. It was very funny. But then they decide to just get a piece of pie. And so they sit down and they start having a conversation. And we find out that Darlene is staying there at the hotel because she has a gig in Reno. And that hotels on the outskirts are cheaper. So she just picked that hotel at random. And then we find out that Father Flynn was visiting his brother. And on the way back, it got dark and he didn't trust his eyes. So he just pulled over and checked into a hotel, which seems odd to me now. I mean,
Wow.
it doesn't really matter, but because when she saw him, he was standing in front of the hotel and he hadn't checked in and it was daylight.
I don't think they said what time it was, but maybe it was right around that time where it's going to get dark really fast and you don't know where the next hotel is going to be.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. It doesn't really matter, as we will soon learn. So then he proceeds to tell her that his mind isn't what it used to be, and it's not due to his age. And so she tells him she's sorry, and he's like, it's like, whatever. It happens. Life happens.
That scene I thought was really kind of sweet and very tender.
Well, I do think it was very intentional. And I can't say why
Yeah.
yet, but it was very intentional.
But what really stood out to me was I sometimes forget about Jeff Bridges as an actor, and I think it really showed a lot of his range in just that one scene, just the simple little description he gave her of losing his memory and having dementia. It really was like, oh wow.
What do you mean? What do you think of him as?
I mean, I forget about how good he is.
Oh.
When I think of great actors, he's not one of them that pops to mind.
Oh. I love him. I've always loved him.
I mean, he's great, but you forget how good he is until you see a scene like this where he really can show it.
Okay. So then he says he's going to go get a drink, convinces her to have one too, and asks her to play something on the jukebox. So she gets up to go pick a song, and they're kind of, he's at the bar, she's at the jukebox, and they can see each other, but they're far apart. And he's kind of talking and, I don't know, saying nonsense stuff. And then he takes a small bottle out of his coat pocket and pours it into her drink and then puts it back in his coat pocket. And as he turns to give it to her, he is met with a champagne or wine or some sort of bottle upside the head and falls to the floor. And Darlene standing there, just kind of looking around.
And it comes out of nowhere. You're like, what just happened?
Right. Yeah. You did not see her coming. Okay. So then another title card pops up and it's Washington, D.C. And there is a lady taking dictation on a phone call that Laramie is making to Director Hoover. So he tells the director that he found multiple wiretaps. Not all of them are theirs. And there was no film in the camera. So the director tells them that their operation has been compromised and no one is to leave until all of their equipment has been found and collected. And he tells the director, well, we have another problem. I saw a young girl possibly kidnapping another young girl. And the director interrupts him and basically tells him, that's not our issue. We're here to, our mission is to get the equipment and get out. That's all that you are to do. Do not interfere. And so then Laramie runs around and starts disconnecting all of the cables, I'm assuming from the battery of the car. I don't really know
I
what he
wasn't
was.
sure what he was doing.
He was taking cables out of everyone's car. And so then another title card pops up and it's room 7. And there's a flashback scene. There's a person walking on the beach and a very nice looking human walking on the and he approaches a young girl who is sitting on the beach. And she's got a big duffel bag and she's wearing like jeans and boots. And so he walks up to her and he starts a conversation with her about how boots on a beach are kind of funny. He can guess where she's from and three guesses. And then he gets it right. And then he tells her that, okay, now you have to come swimming with me. And he starts undressing. And she's like, that wasn't part of the deal. And he's like, you knew the game. And he started playing it. So come on, Boots, let's go for a swim. So then the young girl wakes up in the hotel room, tied to the chair. And Emily gets up off the bed and goes over to her and starts trying to calm her down. And her name is Rose. And Emily tells her, I can't untie you. I need to get you clear. And we need to get as far away from him as possible. He is evil and he's a very bad man. And as soon as you're clear, you'll understand, but we're not going back there. So then there's a knock at the door. Emily goes up to the door and it's Laramie. And he says that the clerk asked him to assist him in going to all of the ladies' rooms and asking if they were okay because the storm had come in and it was pretty violent and wanted to make sure that everyone was fine. She tells him that she's fine. He asks if he can come into the room and she tells him to fuck off. So then it gets silent and she goes to look out of the peephole in her room and Laramie kicks the door in, which hits her and she falls to the ground, looking over at her sister's shoes, which are the boots that she was wearing on the beach. And then she has a flashback of what is obviously her father, who has just hit her and she's on the ground, and he tells her not to get up and stay there and to look at the blood. And every time she sees the, when she tries to be a smart ass, she'll remember the blood on the floor. And he walks away from her and he's wearing those boots or some boots. And she gets up and goes running into her sister's room and wakes her up. So Rose is her sister. And tells her to hide and not to come out no matter what happens. And the dad keeps saying, where's Rosie? Where's Rosie? And Emily is telling her, don't come out of here. No matter what you hear, don't leave. So Emily kind of wakes up after being hit by the door back in the hotel room. And she looks over and she sees Laramie untying Rose, telling her everything's going to be okay. He gets her out of the chair and he stands her up. And Emily stands up with a shotgun and tells Rose to move out of the way. And Laramie puts his hands up and he's like, wait, 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 just wait a minute. And she pulls the trigger and blows him away. And when she does that, Laramie was standing in front of the mirror in the room. And so she blows a hole in the mirror, which reveals the dark hallway behind the mirror. And then they hear some faint moaning in the background, and the two sisters just kind of look at each other. Then the scene switches back to the lobby where Father Flynn is on the floor, knocked out, and Miles is trying to wake him up. And Father Flynn never says to Miles who hit him. You don't really know if he actually does know who hit him, but you kind of think that he starts to remember what happened, but he just says that he's old and he fell and get him a drink. He needs a drink. So Father Flynn sits down at the table. Miles brings him the drink. And then Miles tells him, I used to be a devout Catholic and I haven't been to the church in a long time, but I would like to sort of confess my sins to you. And he tells him that he's seen some really bad things. He's done some really bad things and he, you know, wants to confess these things. And then Father Flynn says, not now, and says, do you have a master key? And Miles says, oh, did you lose your key, Father? And he was like, well, you know, I'm old, whatever. So he goes to get the master key and it's gone. And so Miles walks into his room and the father follows him and reveals that Miles is a junkie. And Miles starts to look like he's ashamed. And the father's like, don't worry about it. What is all this back here? And so the father starts to walk down the hallways and he sees the windows and everybody's room. And so he's like, he gets mad at Miles. He throws him up against a wall and he's like, have you been watching us? And Miles tells him, no, I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen anything you've done. He's like, I only do it when management calls me and tells me to come back here and record them. The father says, what do you do with the film? And he says, I send it to management. And he said, have you ever kept any of it? And Miles says, once, I think he said last year, but I don't
He
know.
did.
He
He
did.
did.
Okay. Last year, there was someone here, someone important. You would know him. And he was really kind to me. And so I couldn't do it. So I just told him the film was lost and I didn't ever send
Should we talk about
it. Sure, we
that
can.
now? Who do you think they were talking about?
Well, I will say this. At that point in the movie, I didn't really think much of it. It was later on that it was kind of like, huh. So my initial thought was Kennedy, because later in the movie, when they're talking about it, they say he's dead. And whoever it was would have really hurt that person. And everybody there knew who it was.
Right.
So I assumed Kennedy.
That's who I thought at first, too, until I picked up on him saying that that guy was there last year, meaning 1968.
What, so that it couldn't have been him. He was dead in 63.
And so I can think of two other people that it possibly could have been. I mean, it could have been John F. Kennedy's brother, Robert Kennedy, who was a presidential nominee and assassinated in 1968. They never really say who he was on film with. It's obviously with a woman. But to me, I kind of thought that the Kennedys, there were already those rumors, even while they were alive, about them with Marilyn and other women. So I don't know that that would have been much of a big surprise or shock to anybody, really, to the point where it could have ruined someone's career, because it really didn't ruin John F. Kennedy's political career. So then the other person I started thinking about was, could it have been Martin Luther King Jr.?
That was my other guess.
And I kind of settled on that I think that's who it is, based on something else that happens a little later.
Yeah, that's who I kind of thought it was. What year was he assassinated?
In 1968. But one thing I did find out is that this hotel, the El Royale, is based on a real hotel.
Is it by State Hotel
It's
or?
a it's called the Cal Neva Resort and Casino, and it's a resort and casino straddling the border between Nevada and California on the shores of Lake Tahoe. It was formerly owned in part by Frank Sinatra. And this hotel first gained fame in the 30s when Clara Bow stayed there, the It Girl, and ran up some gambling debts to the tune of $13,000, and that made news. Judy Garland performed there at the age of 13, and several members of the Kennedys stayed there. And following a request by Robert F. Kennedy, who had concerns over the press coverage of his and his brother's relationship with Marilyn Monroe, Sinatra made accommodations available for Marilyn to spend the weekend there, the weekend prior to her death on August the 4th, 1962. And during that period, she was not allowed to leave and not allowed to have visitors, with the exception of the Chicago mobster Sam Giancana. Even her former husband, Joe DiMaggio, was turned away and was not allowed to visit her. While she stayed there that weekend, she attempted suicide with a pill overdose, but she called the front desk, and then she was rushed to the hospital and had her stomach pumped. But there are some conspiracy theories that linger to this day that say she actually died at that hotel.
Really?
I did not know that.
How long did she stay there before she died?
What I read made it sound like it was the weekend before.
The weekend before. Okay.
So, I mean, with that history, it kind of makes me think that they were meaning Robert F. Kennedy. And things I read, I mean, over the many years, it was a hotspot for lots and lots of different celebrities. So, I mean, it's very possible that someone like Martin Luther King Jr. stayed there. Well, I mean, it's not an actual true story anyway.
No, no.
It's just.
But as we will learn a little bit later too, they are bringing in actual people in a way during that time period.
Yeah, references to things that are
Yeah.
going on, but I don't know. There's just something like, if they are trying to make those insinuations about MLK, that's interesting. And another thing that I think Miles mentions a little bit later, or maybe around this time, is about this guy's reputation and how revered he is. And I think that is more MLK than RFK.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, it is definitely rumored. It is definitely rumored that he was not faithful to his wife. So I don't know enough to know whether they've said, oh, yep, he cheated on her. But it is definitely a thing. So.
And I think it is definitely factual that the FBI were surveilling him.
Okay. So as Father Flynn and Miles are talking, Father Flynn asks Miles where the film is. And Miles kind of interrupts him and says, none of this is has anything to do with what I wanted to confess. And the father looks at him and says, "Tell me where the film is." So Miles tells him, and the father goes running down the hallway back to Miles's room and starts digging around, and he finds it and he puts it in his pocket. And while this is going on, Miles starts screaming for Father Flynn because they had seen the girl sitting in the chair in the room because they were in the hallway with the little peep show going on. And Miles was witnessing Laramie busting the door down and hitting Emily, knocking her to the floor and untying Rose. I mean, he was witnessing this whole thing. So he's yelling for Father Flynn to come here and look at this. And as Father Flynn turns the corner and sees him, Miles yells out, she has a gun. And Father Flynn says, "Get away from the window." And that's when the trigger is pulled and it hits Miles. And Miles is laying there in pain, reaching out for Father Flynn, who turns and runs out of the hallway. So then it switches back to Darlene after she knocked Father Flynn out. And she goes running back to her room, grabs her purse and her keys. And she goes over to her car and she sees Laramie unplugging the cables from the cars and tucking them into his pocket of his raincoat. She tries to start her car because he goes back into his room and it won't start, won't click over. So she starts praying. And as she looks up, Laramie is coming back out of his room and going to room 7, which is Emily and Rose's room. And that whole scene is about to go down and she's watching the whole thing and sees what happens. So as she's watching what goes on, Emily tells Rose to stay where she is and hops through the window. And you can hear her talking to Miles. So then Rose, being who she is, goes into, I guess, was it the adjoining room?
Well, I couldn't tell if it was a different room or if it was just the same room, but just her sister had left. I don't know.
I guess it was the same room. And anyway, she gets on the phone and calls someone. And she tells this person that her sister took her there and she wants to come home. And so she gives this person the name of the hotel. We gather that this person is on his way to get her. Then Rose gets off the bed because Emily's calling her and she goes and climbs through the window to see what Emily's doing. And at this point, Darlene runs into the room and digs through Laramie's pockets to find the cables, grabs some of them and his gun, and runs back outside and tries to hook up her car, gets in her car, tries to start it. It still won't start. And then there's a sudden knock at her window and Father Flynn is standing and he says, "I'm sorry about before. I just need to talk to you. Please let me in." And she holds the gun on him and she's like, "If you think I will not shoot you in the face."
This is another really good scene, the two of them.
And he's like, "I'm sure that you would." And so she lets him in. He sits down. He tells her he wasn't trying to harm her. He just needed to get into her room. And he tells her the truth about what he's doing. So many years ago, I guess 10 years ago, he and his brother and another individual robbed a bank. And it didn't go well. They got the money, but then there was like an accident or something. I don't know. And basically told his brother that they were to meet up at the El Royale Hotel. And that if anything went wrong and he didn't show, that his brother was to bury the money at the hotel and they would get it later. And he says, "I wasn't lying to you about my memory. That's true. I got caught for the robbery. I've been in prison for 10 years. They diagnosed me there. So when I got here, I couldn't remember the room number. So I took 4, you took 5, but the money wasn't in 4. It's in 5. So I need to get into your room to find the money." And she says, well, what do you want me to do with this information? And he's like, well, here are your options. You can either help me get the money and then I'll split it with you 50-50, or you can take your chances with the kids inside, or you can leave after all of this has happened with the cops coming after the man who just got shot in a room, and they find you with a gun, his gun, in the woods, and you're a black woman. Don't think that's going to work out well for you. So she agrees to help him find the money.
She's like, how much money are we talking?
He didn't tell her, did he?
No, he never said.
So now back in the lobby, Emily has tied the clerk up to a chair, who is okay. He just got hit like buckshot or something in his face. And he's very scared and he's very upset. And he's telling her, you don't have to kill me. And Rose is floating around the lobby, acting like she's about 6 years old. And she's just
Literally swinging from the chandelier.
literally, yeah. And Emily is trying to tell the clerk that they have to kill him because he knows he saw what she did to Laramie. And he's like, you know what? I've seen worse than that. And he goes through this litany of things that he has seen at this hotel. And I'm not going to go into it because it was some of it's just gross, but it's some bad stuff. And then he says, this is nothing compared to all of that. I don't even know your name. I never called the cops on them. I'm not going to call the cops on you. I don't know your name. So don't worry about it. And then Rose, who is swinging from the chandelier, is saying, well, I'm Rose.
I'm
And
Rose
this is,
Summer Spring.
this is my sister Emily. What's your name? And then Emily and Miles just kind of look at each other like, shit, because she's going to have to kill him. Then she asks Miles, where are the others? So then it switches to Darlene in her room, and she's sitting in a chair and she's looking at the mirror. And she starts singing this little medley of songs. So she starts with one, and then she stops and she takes her wig off. She has very short hair and throws the wig away, and then she starts singing another song, and then she stops, and then she settles on the song You Can't Hurry Love.
So I'm sure you picked up on this, but all of Cynthia Erivo's singing was live in this movie. There were no recorded, pre-recorded tracks at all. And when filming this scene, this long tracking shot of her performing this song, she performed it 27 times.
Wow. Yeah, she's got an incredible voice. I remember seeing this movie for the first time. I just think I'd never seen her before. And I was just like, who is this chick? Because she's gonna be big.
This was her first movie.
Yeah, she had a phenomenal voice and she was very good in the movie. So Darlene is pacing up and down the room, like in the room, and as she passes by, they do this really cool camera scene because she's sitting in a chair and she's trying all these different songs and she gets to the one and she's taking off her wig and the camera is kind of like spinning around her. And then she stands up to start walking. And as she passes by the beds that are in her room, the viewer sees Father Flynn on the floor starting to cut the carpet of the room of her floor. No, of the floor of her room.
Out of view of whoever is watching from the mirror window.
Right. He is on the floor in between the two beds. And so it's obvious they're working together and trying to not let anyone see what's happening. So at that point, Emily is coming down the hallway and seeing the windows, and she is looking for Father Flynn and Darlene. And she sees Darlene in her room, turns on the speaker, and hears her singing You can't hurry love. And she just stands there watching her. And then as Darlene is singing it, every so often she claps. And as she does that, Father Flynn hits a crowbar on the top. He's trying to bust the floorboards up. And so the noise of him doing that is masked by her clapping, because I think they covered the crowbar with like some sort of material so that it wouldn't make a really loud noise, but it's still going to make a banging noise. So it was masked by that. So Emily never heard it. And after she stays for a while, she switches off the speaker and turns and goes back to the lobby. Now, while she was in the hallway and had left Miles with Rosie, Miles is trying to convince Rosie that they don't have to kill him. And Rosie says, well, that's not entirely up to me. And he says, well, just talk to your sister and just tell her you don't have to do this. And she says, well, it's not entirely up to her either. And Miles says, well, who is it up to? And that's when Emily comes back in the room and she looks at Miles and she's like, where's the father, Miles? And he says, I don't know. And she alludes to killing Miles again. And Rose says, again, it's not entirely up to us. And Emily says, Rose, what are you talking about? Who is it up to? And then Rose doesn't say anything. And Emily's like, what did you do? So at this point, Father Flynn has found the money. He and Darlene are leaving the hotel and they're trying to get out before the others see them. And they start to go to their cars and they are stopped suddenly by a group of people. One of them being a man named Billy Lee, who was evil to the core, but he was hot as hell. Sorry. Just got to throw that in there. He is played by Chris Hemsworth. And so there's a flashback where we see the cult that Billy Lee is head of. And Emily was trying to find Rosie and went to the cult and said she wanted to join because Rosie was there. And Billy Lee tells her, you don't have to join because you have Ken here. You join because you want to. And so later on that night, they're at a bonfire and Billy Lee does what all good cult leaders do and manipulates everyone there and tells Rosie to fight another cult member, another female, and whoever wins the fight gets to sleep with him that night.
I'd have been beating people up left and right.
Well, apparently Rosie feels the same way because she went after that girl with everything she had. And Emily is watching the whole thing and realizing, okay, this is cuckoo banana and I've got to get her out of here. And he ends up breaking up the fight and telling them to love each other and stuff like that. But it's very obvious that they're going for the whole Manson thing with this. And Billy is Charles Manson, except much better looking.
Very hot Charles.
So back at the hotel, Billy Lee has tied up Emily, Miles, Darlene, and Father Flynn around a roulette table. He tells two of his followers to go get the body out of the room and put it in the trunk of the car. And he tells his other two followers to hold guns they're behind the four people tied up in the chairs. He says to hold the guns on them, and if they move, shoot them. And Rosie is running around being Rosie in the background. And did I say this? Billy Lee tells them to leave room in the trunk. So he tells them that. And then he tells Rosie to turn some music on, and he's making out with her by the jukebox. And poor Miles is covered in buckshot one side of his face, and he's so scared and he's crying and he's just saying over and over that he can't do this, he can't go through this. And Billy Lee tells him to shut up or he's gonna I don't know, shoot him in the face or whatever. And so then Billy Lee starts interrogating them and he grabs the guest list and he's like, so I know you're Father Flynn. And he says, I'm assuming you are Darlene Sweet, pointing at Darlene. And he says, Emily, I can guess that you are fuck you. And then he's like, and the other guy is in the trunk of my car. And he asks Miles who he is. And he says, okay. So he starts asking them what they're doing there, Father Flynn and Darlene. And where did all the money come from? Because he has taken the money and dumped it out on the roulette table. And the reel of film that Father Flynn took from Miles, it was in the bag as well. And Darlene says the money is hers and that she earned it singing. And Billy Lee looks at her and says, oh, so you're that good to earn that much money? And she's like, yes, I am. And she's not giving him anything. I mean, she is like.
And she's not lying. She did just earn it singing.
True. So then Billy Lee picks up the film and looks at it. And he's like, is this who I think it is? And then Rosie says, I want to see. And she goes over and looks at it. And she's like, it just looks like two people doing it. And he's like, look at it closer. And she's like, oh, I know him. And she's like, but he's dead. And Billy Lee tells her that something to along the lines of some people are worth a lot of money even when they're dead.
Like to protect their reputation. Is that where that comes in?
Could be something about that. So then Billy Lee tells them they're going to play a game. And he tells Emily to pick a color. And she says no. And so he convinces her. I can't remember what he was doing to her, but he pretty much convinces her to pick a color, black or red. She picks red. And Miles is freaking out because when she does pick the color red, he tells Miles that he's black. And Miles is crying and he's looking at Father Flynn and he's saying, you know, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. You know, he's looking for absolution. He wants to confess and he's freaking out. And Billy Lee is like, would you just tell him? Because if you don't tell him, I'm going to tell him. And Father Flynn looks at him and is like, Miles, please, and he can't get it out. And Billy Lee tells him he's not a father. He's pretending. So he throws the roulette ball into the little spinner thing, spins it around, and it stops on black. And he looks at Miles and says, well, the good Lord might have saved you this evening or something, and turns the gun on Emily and shoots her. And she falls to the floor, bleeding to death, and looks over as she's laying on the floor at Rosie, who was just staring at her. Like, there's no, I don't care that you just, I mean, she literally doesn't care that she just shot her sister. He just shot her sister. And we come to find out that the news story of the elderly couple that was stabbed to death was done by Rosie. And I guess Billy Lee is going to protect her.
And I'm assuming that elderly couple is in reference to that, the LaBianca murders that the Manson family did the day after killing Sharon Tate.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't it all on one continuous night? It was just like that morning they were still on the killing spree and it was an elderly couple. Yeah, probably. So Billy Lee comes back over and he sits down and he says, now, are you guys going to tell me the truth or what? Father Flynn tells him that the money is his, that they stole it. His brother died taking the money. That's why he's there. A lot of people died trying to get that money. He wants the money. He's earned it, blah, blah, blah. And Billy Lee asks, well, who else is looking for this money? He's like, no one. Everyone else is dead. It's just me. And so he sits down in front of Darlene and he's like, so what's your story? And she's like, I'm a singer. I'm just staying here. And he starts to ask her something else. And she says, do you know what you look like to me? You are just a man who talks a lot. Talks so much that he thinks he believes in something. But really, he just wants to fuck who he wants to fuck. And she says, I've seen it enough, not even mad about it anymore. I'm just tired. I'm bored of men like you. You think I don't see you for who you really are. You're a fragile little man, prey on the weak and lost. And then he tries to interrupt her to kind of justify what he's doing or whatever. And she just completely interrupts him. And she says, I've heard it. I don't care. I'd rather sit here and listen to the rain. And he just stares at her. It was the most awesome. I mean, she was just done with the whole thing. He was trying to entice her to look at the film. She was like, I don't care who's on the film. I don't care about hurting someone's reputation. Like, she just was done. And so Billy Lee looks at Father Flynn and asks him for his real name because he wants to make sure that no one's going to come after the money. And he wants to find out if his story is legit. And he can't remember. He legitimately can't remember. And he looks at Darlene and he says, he's kind of crying. I mean, it's like really sad and sweet at the same time, but he's kind of crying. And he's like, did I ever tell you my real name? And she's like, no, you didn't. And it's kind of getting like really intense. And you could tell that Billy Lee is about to, you know, just go insane. And all of a sudden the lights go out. And so Billy Lee is like, we're going to play again. And he says, it's too quiet in here though. And now we can't listen to the jukebox. So you sing something. And Darlene's like, no. And he's like, okay, well, I'll tell you what, if you sing a song and I think it's good enough, then I won't make you play the game. And Father Flynn is like, don't do it. You know, he doesn't deserve to hear you sing. And so Billy Lee is like, fine. And he starts to spin the wheel again. And Darlene grabs it and stops it. And she's like, fine, I'll sing. In my notes, I have, she sings the ghost song.
Is Unchained Melody?
Yeah. So she starts to sing Unchained Melody. And I mean, it is just this beautiful moment where everybody is just listening to her and lost in their own thoughts of what's about to happen. And right as she hits the really high notes, Billy Lee grabs the roulette wheel and says, I've heard better. And you could tell he was just doing it because she had just gotten him. So he was about to get her. And he starts to spin the wheel again. And Father Flynn has had enough. And he gets up and just goes after Billy Lee. And
headbutts him, doesn't he?
Yeah. And just, they start fighting. The chair breaks. He gets free. And they just start fighting. He's throwing him into the fire. There's all these little fireplaces in the lobby. And he's throwing him into the fire. And then the two followers start to shoot at Father Flynn, and Darlene kicks the roulette table and all the stuff goes flying and she falls to the floor. Miles ends up breaking his chair and getting free, but he's like in a panic moment. She's laying on the floor and the gun that she had that was on the roulette table is sitting right next to Miles. And she's trying to get Miles to help them because Father Flynn and Billy Lee are fighting and Father Flynn has got the upper hand, but then crazy ass Rosie comes jumping on him and gets into the mix as well. So Miles looks at Darlene and says, I can't kill anybody else. I can't do it. I can't kill anybody else. And she says to him, how many people have you killed, Miles? And he says, 123. And then she kind of closes her eyes like to say, okay, I give. Because she says to him, you don't have to kill anybody else. It's okay. And she kind of closes her eyes. And then there's a flashback scene of Miles in Vietnam. And he was a sniper in Vietnam. And he is just sitting there shooting multiple, like person after person. And then obviously there was some sort of bomb that went off and he was knocked out. And when he wakes up, he is in a sea of nothing but death. And all the people around him are dead except for him. And so he gets down on his knees and he just starts praying.
So I had a question at this point. When it shows him in his sniper mode and he is just taking out target after target after target, not really paying attention really to who he's shooting, do you think he was killing some of his own men? Was he just in
No.
kill mode?
I didn't take it that way at all. I thought he was killing who he was told to kill. And when he wakes up, there was some sort of, they got hit. And all of the people in his company were dead except for him.
Okay. If for some reason I was thinking, well, maybe he snapped and he killed everyone. And then that's why he's struggling with the whole, I've killed all of these people. I mean, if you did it in war, couldn't you kind of justify I was killing the enemy and it's not that bad?
I mean, I guess you could, but I also th think it depends on the kind of person you are. I mean, he was a young kid. I mean, he looked like, literally, he looked like he was 16 years old. And, he's put in these situations, these horrible situations where he's in Vietnam as a sniper. It didn't matter if it was man, woman, or child. If they were the enemy, he was killing them. And then he's at this hotel where he's seeing these horrible things. I mean, I didn't go into it, but he was talking to Emily about it. And it, I mean, weird ass shit. And then he's like filming people. And I mean, this poor kid has been through a lot. He just snapped, couldn't take it anymore. But anyway, they show you what happened to him in Vietnam. And then they show Billy Lee has got Father Flynn, and he's about to kill him. And all of a sudden, you hear, like, did he have a rifle? No, he had a handgun. You hear the click of the revolver, and Billy Lee turns around, and Miles shoots him in the head, then shoots one of the other followers in the head. And then one of the other followers jumps behind a couch, and he shoots through the couch and hits her in the head. And then he goes, I mean, he just, his composure, I mean, he just becomes very calm and
Just a
very in the moment.
machine, a killing
Yeah.
machine.
And he goes over to Father Flynn and he says, hold the gun. And he goes and gets the knife from Billy Lee's side. And he goes over and he cuts Father Flynn loose. And then he goes and picks up a rifle and aims it at the two followers outside who are putting the guy in the trunk.
Well, he picks it up off the
Oh yeah.
floor into his hands.
Yeah, he sees it and kind of kicks it up with the front of his foot and grabs it and walks over and kills the two followers outside.
I was just saying, kill Rose, kill Rose, kill Rose next.
Yeah, that was his biggest mistake. And so he comes back in the lobby and Rose is sobbing and she's over by Billy Lee and Miles goes over to her and kneels down and puts his hand on her shoulder. And she turns around and stands up and she has a knife and she stabs Miles and pretty much guts him. Then Father Flynn has the gun, was holding the gun that Miles handed him, and he shoots Rose and kills her. And then Miles kind of walks over to the steps in the lobby and falls down, and Darlene and Father Flynn go over to him, and Miles is asking for absolution. And Darlene says, help him. And Father Flynn looks down and says, I can't. And she's like, no, help him. And so Father Flynn starts acting like an actual priest. And Miles says, you're not a priest. And he was like, yes, I am. Yes, I am. And he's, starts talking to him and praying for him and grants him the absolution. And he dies. And so then they have a silent moment, and then they go over and they gather up what they can, the film reel and the money, and they're shoving it in the bag. And Darlene takes the film reel and throws it in the fire and destroys it. And then they leave.
That was a very slow spreading fire in that
It sure
hotel.
was. It's very planned.
It should have gone up in no time at all, but there's a good 10 minutes where things are slowly burning.
It's like little pockets of fire everywhere. So I don't know that it was the next day, but a little bit of time has passed, and we see a man walking into a club, and he's dressed in like a white suit and he's got gray hair. I mean, it's obvious that it's Father Flynn. He goes into the club and he sits down at one of the tables, and Darlene comes out and sings the song "Hold On, I'm Coming." And as she starts to perform, she sees Father Flynn sitting at the table. And, she's at the Reno Club, not really a big audience, but you can tell she's happy. And that was the end of the movie.
Right there, the very last scene, I kind of got the impression that that was the very next day because she kept making a point a couple of times throughout the movie of telling him, I'm going to be performing at this club tomorrow at 6 o'clock. That was her mission, was to get there. So
Okay.
I
And it might
think
have,
it.
I mean, it could have been. I mean, I think I actually did notice he was still kind of scarred or bruised from where she had hit him with the bottle. So I knew that not too much time had passed. So maybe it was the next day. I don't know.
Yeah. And I don't think he would have remembered it very long.
Well, that's true.
I thought it was just such a surprising little movie that came out of nowhere and was really, really entertaining.
I agree. I had seen this movie before a while back, so I didn't remember everything about it. Mainly what I remembered about it was Cynthia Erivo, incredible talent that she is. And I thought mostly about this movie. The story was interesting, but everybody in this movie was so damn good.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's so surprising that nobody was nominated.
Yeah, no,
Because
I would agree.
I think easily at least three of them should have been.
I definitely think that Lewis Pullman should have been. He was
Miles.
fantastic. Miles, yeah, he was fantastic. Jeff Bridges was fantastic, but I think he's
Yep.
fantastic in everything. And Cynthia Erivo, I mean, but even Dakota Johnson, her part wasn't huge, but she was very subtle and
Yeah.
very like. She showed a lot of emotions without saying anything. She was really, really good. I mean, everybody was really good at this. I mean, even Chris Hemsworth. I mean, he played a psycho killer, but and his part was very small, but he was frightening. Hot, but frightening.
And I mean, I guess the lady who played Rose was good too. I mean, we both hated her and couldn't wait for her to die, but I mean, I guess that's what you would want for, one of the Manson family.
So even if the movie wasn't nominated Best Picture, I guess what surprises me is that
No
none of
acting,
the
though.
actors were. I think this was a very missed sleeper type movie.
And I think the only reason I even saw it or knew to go see it was for Cynthia Erivo, because I had seen her on Broadway in The Color Purple and had my mind blown. And when I knew that she was going to be in a movie, I was like, well, I have to go see that. And then, I mean, it's almost as if this role was written with her in mind, which really it wasn't. It was originally offered to Beyonce, who turned it down. And it went to Cynthia Erivo, but it's almost like the kind of movie that would put her on the map because it has everything, all of her talents rolled into one. I'm looking forward to seeing her in Wicked.
Is she going to be in Wicked?
She's Elphaba.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Now, I'm not going to Idina Menzel. I'm sorry, but she's up there too. I mean, great talent, but whoo, I can't wait to see her do this. That's gonna be fun. Is it a movie?
Yeah.
Oh.
But apparently it's a movie in two parts, and I don't really know why.
It is a musical, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if they're doing the entire book.
I guess so.
And not making it like the play. Because the book is a lot darker. Interesting. Well, anyway, I enjoyed this movie. I agree with you. I think it should have had someone from it nominated. And to be honest with you, above anyone else, I think it should have been Lewis Pullman. And the story was creative. And I mean, like I said, it's violent. If you're not into that type of thing, I wouldn't recommend it. But, it was very told really well, and it was very creative.
And yeah, it was violent, but it really was kind of a commentary or a mirror of what was going on in the late 60s.
True, true.
So, what are we going to look at for next week?
We are going to watch another little sleeper that I think did get nominated, but I think they missed the boat on a little movie called Promising Young Woman, starring Carey Mulligan, Bo Burnham, Alison Brie, and Clancy Brown. And Jennifer Coolidge is in this as well.
Is she? I don't remember her.
Well, I guess you'll have to watch it to see who she played. I mean, there's some people that pop up. Connie Britton is in it. Molly Shannon. I mean, there's a few names. I enjoyed this movie very much and thought it should have won. So I want to see what you think.
I remember enjoying it. I'm gonna have to look at it again through that lens of did they get it right or not? Well, I guess I'll see you next week.
All right, bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to another episode of You Need to Watch While Drunk. If you like what you've heard so far, please hit subscribe and don't forget to rate and review this podcast. If you'd like to contact us, just shoot us an email at watchwhiledrunk@gmail.com. Until next time.
Because I need a drink.
Okay. Quick break, like 20, 30 minutes, or you can be back in a decent time.
You need to pipe down. Just pipe down. I've had enough of you today already.
Bye. Can we take a quick break? Foster is whining and I need to see if he'll go outside,
oh
but
my
it's raining.
God, is this like a 20-minute break or like a 30-minute break? Or is
it might be. Night? I'll be back whenever. So, did you say we're not recording?
Next weekend.
Got a what?
That made me pee my pants.
So what were you saying?
I don't know.
So taxi drive. What is today? Taxi drive. And that's the last one on it.
Don't start with me. Don't start with me.
So, Bad Times at El Royale. That makes how many?
I don't know.
I do. That makes 6 to Evan.
I will have every one of those done before their release.
You know what this means, though, right? Mm-hmm. Never mind.
What?
That means that now you only have like a week to get them done.
All of them?
Each one.
I think that'll be pretty easy.
Well, it might be pretty easy, but you only have a week.
I don't have 1 week to do 3 of them.
Listen. When did you start working on The Awful Truth?
All week last week.
When did you start working on it?
Oh, actually, you know what? I remember the day I started working. It was a Thursday.
Like Thursday the 18th, probably. As 9 days. You're not going to have 9 days for any of the others.
Okay. Do you want to do one? Is that what you're asking me?
No, I'm just saying. I don't know if you're... Are you editing too much? Do you get more than like 10 or 15 minutes of it then?
Which I get, yes, I get more than 10 or 15 minutes of it done. But I mean, if we had to take out all the spaces and all the and all the snot and the snorting and everything else that's in between, I mean, you know, it takes time.
Okay. I mean, I guess I don't need to be worried because, I mean, you're editing them so well that there's nothing for me to do, really. So I just listen and then post it. So
flattery will get you everywhere.
So you keep doing what you're doing. I'll keep hoping my nails grow back.